Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer, as always, is Bette Marston. This is episode 10, I believe, of the SI Media Podcast. Thank you so much for the great feedback that we've been getting. Last guest was Wright Thompson of ESPN, and it seemed like people really liked that. So that's very, very cool to hear, and certainly to read the comments on Twitter and SoundCloud, etc. Today, our guest is the Fox Sports host and reporter, Carissa Thompson. She's also a co-host for the syndicated entertainment news show Extra. And last September, I interviewed Carissa for SportsIllustrated.com, and it was one of the most it might have been the best interview I did last year, and that's only because of her. She was just really introspective and honest and interesting and just very different than a lot of the broadcasters I talk to, who I think are generally honest, but you always get the impression a little bit that people are sort of not necessarily fronting, but they're putting on a bit of an image because they are public people. My interview with Carissa was interesting just because I think she just sort of let it all hang out, and sometimes just with interviews you click because you feel like it's something authentic and real, and that's how I felt. When I talked to her, she talked about relationships with people in the business, talked about some pretty, I thought, honest things about her own life. So I knew when this podcast started, she was one of the guests I wanted to get on because I really enjoyed that conversation last year. So we will be talking to her in Los Angeles very early in the morning for her. And without further ado, here's Carissa Thompson of Fox Sports. Okay, as promised, we bring in Carissa Thompson from Los Angeles, California, where, as we tape this, it is 6:30 in the morning for Carissa. Carissa, who, first of all, thank you for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. And why on earth are you?
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Why on earth are you up so early?
because I'm the In Living Color skit. I have 9 jobs. This is normal for me to be at Extra at 6:30, and I come into hair and makeup. I know, it's shocking. I require hair and makeup, a lot of it. So I come into hair and makeup at 6:30, and then I'm here until right around like 7:15, and then I drive over to Universal Studios Hollywood, where we have a meeting about like the day's topics for entertainment news, and then we start taping around 10, depending on what guests we have, and then so on and so forth. So I'm at Extra until around 3:30, and then I head over to Fox around 5:30. So this is how I start my morning, but it's good. I'm a morning person, so it's easy for me to get up. I start to hit a wall later in the day, but morning I'm good.
No doubt, Onwright and O'Toole are fast asleep in their Los Angeles mansions prior to.
Yeah, exactly. The ones that they probably live next door to each other in now. How they got in their contract that one doesn't work with without the other is beyond me. Like, that is for sure what I'm doing in my next deal with whoever. I mean, I have Sarah Walsh at that point will be working at Fox. Probably not. But if she and I could work out a deal where we only work with each other, it would be amazing. I'm like, where's Jay? Where's Dan? They only work with one another. I was like, that's incredible.
Canadians are smart. They use that sort of, fake politeness and niceness and then end up getting what they want. So it's brilliant.
Oh, those are your words, not mine.
No, we love Canadians both on this podcast and in reality. All right, Carissa, one of the things that happens on this podcast that people seem to have really reacted well to is process and how people prepare for their job. So understanding that you have this extra role as well, let's focus for the moment on Fox Sports Live. As specific as you can, how do you prepare for that show when you know you're going to be hosting that day? From either the morning you wake up or, the night before, or you're preparing throughout the week. I think people would be interested just in how you prepare and process to host that show on a daily basis.
Okay, so that's a good question. And it's funny to me because I feel like I've just been pontificating about something that no one cares about. But if people do actually have an interest in the process, then I'm happy to explain that. So it's changed a lot since I took on this other job in the morning. So, for example, like I'll sit in the makeup chair, and social media being what it is, even just scrolling through a Twitter feed, you can get caught up on, you know, sort of what's happened overnight in sports and in entertainment. And as the day goes on, I do have my phone with me all day, so it's sort of that constant checkup, so I have an eye or an idea of what's happening in sports even while I'm doing extra. But as the day starts to go on, I don't have access to ESPN or Fox Sports Live or any TV channel or sports channel at Extra, because however the offices work, we don't have any TV in our studios. So by the time I get out of Extra, I've just relied on the internet and or my phone. So what I'll do, I usually get like a 2-hour break between 3:30 and 5:30 is my downtime. So I either use that time to go to the gym and work out, and that's when I can watch TV and get caught up on the day of sports, or I'll go back home and chill out for an hour, you know, and watch TV there and just sort of see what's happening in the world, and or I'll go straight into Fox and then sort of download on the day's events. And there's in the green room there, you know, there's couches and TVs and stuff like that. So by the time our meeting starts at 5:30 for Fox Sports Live, I have, you know, a very good idea of what's happened in the day of sports. And then we get a list of topics, ideas that the producers have compiled throughout the day, sort of ideas of what we want to talk about, and also which analysts we have in the building that day who can further elaborate on various things. Like if we have, you know, let's say Brian Scalabrine in, how we're going to structure different segments is different for him than, let's say, it would be for Jimmy Jackson, you know, just based off of their various skill sets, personalities, et cetera. So we sort of collaboratively, producers and or talent, which is my least favorite word in life, by the way. It just seems so self-serving. But for the practical purposes, I will refer to myself as talent only for this discussion. We then go through sort of who's going to be on what segment, who's going to do what. And then, you know, as the night goes on, just like anything, you know that things change. And games, a lot of times, you know, we don't go on until the structure of Fox Sports Live has changed many times. But now the show that I'm doing within the structure of Fox Sports Live is Fox Sports Live Countdown, which goes on from 9 to 10. So I leave that meeting at 5:30 around, let's say, 6. I mean, I hope people even care about this. But
they do.
Around 6-ish, I'd say like 6:15-ish. Go back downstairs for hair and makeup. Yes, I get hair and makeup twice throughout the day. It takes a village, apparently. So I go back downstairs, do a makeup sort of touch-up for the night. I'm out of there by 7. Then from 7 to 9, that's my prep time. So now that I know what the rundown's going to be, you know, barring any unforeseen changes, then I do my homework and study up for the night. And then I go on, you know, we're live from 9 to 10. And then my day wraps up. I'm out of the building around 10:45. So on the whole, you know, I start my day at Extra around 6:30, and then I'll go until around 10:45 on the days that I have both. And right now, summer months, I have both of them, I'd say, 2 to 3 times a week. And then in the fall, I have them 4 times a week. So that's sort of what my schedule. I mean, does that?
Yeah, that's first. Yeah, no. That first of all, that's a long day. Let me ask you something about the pre-show meeting, which obviously people who are not in the business probably have don't have a great understanding of. How many people would be in such a pre-show meeting for that night's Fox Sports Live show, and roughly how long would such a meeting take?
There's about 20 people in that meeting. That's just, you know, give or take a few. I think that for the most part, it depends on who we have, because the great thing and what I love about Fox is they allow you to have a lot of different jobs. So a lot of the people that we have on with us are coming from their other job, whether that's a radio show, whether that's a TV show. So sometimes in that 5:30 meeting, all the producers are in there, but as far as the quote-unquote talent, sometimes they're in the room or not in the room or on a conference call so that or have been briefed on what the night's rundown looks like. The meeting's actually – the only one that's consistently sort of in the meeting every day is – I think it's me, and then maybe, you know, one or two analysts that was already in the building, let's say, that had worked on a previous show like America's Pregame, and they had just come off air, and then they come on over to our 5:30 meeting to sort of see – it's the same content, but how we are going to be presenting it. So I would say I get it, that meeting starts at 5:30. I leave around 6:15 to go down for hair and makeup because I usually end up doing show pre-tapes around 7. But that meeting, for the most part, goes on for a full hour. I'm in just about 30, maybe 45 minutes of it.
How much, as quote-unquote talent, how much input do you get for every show that you're on? You know, obviously producers are – they have a job. They do what they do. Their job is to essentially structure the show. But ultimately, it's your voice. It's your face. You're the person who's connecting to the audience. So how much how much input can you have on a daily basis to the content?
That's a funny question because I used to get in trouble, not with an actual scolding, but with a lot of eye rolls. And I have been a producer before, so I have the utmost respect for what they do and the process. And you know, when you think you've got a great idea and then you present it to someone and they shoot it down right away, I've worked on my tone and the way that I either advocate or negate an idea, but I have a lot of input in the way. A big thing for us, and this is the maturation of the show in general, and the show has changed, as you know, a lot of different times, and I know that it's become kind of a joke at this point, like, what are we doing? But that's okay. We're still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to figure out our own identity within the network as a whole, but also in the show and how it's structured. So now in this new format, which I'm particularly a fan of, that 9 to 10, that countdown, because it's straight through. I like a countdown-style show. But in, not to deviate from the original question, but in the actual show ideas and the content and all that kind of stuff, I do have a lot of input. What I focus primarily on is the way, the questions that we're asking. We can have a subject of, okay, what do you think of, you know, the NBA Finals, right? But it's, for me, that's like such, I'm more interested in the micro, not the macro. So we know what the subject's going to be, but what kind of question, this is one thing I learned while filling in over at First Take when they were making their transition before they hired Carrie. I would fill in a lot in that moderator position. And they were very good about asking the right kinds of questions that would elicit an interesting response. Now, some of them were absolutely absurd,
right,
but the question is so many times overlooked. And so that, for me, is the primary focus in those meetings. And it became sort of a running joke where I would say, okay, well, what's the question? Everyone's like, oh, here we go with this one. So for me, the subjects are sort of laid out, and there's really not a lot of deviating from that. But for me, it's the angle in which we're going to take on that specific subject matter. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And speaking of Carrie, I was happy to see that she's freed from Shawshank. So that's exciting news, and she'll move on to SportsCenter now, which is
a
pretty good gig.
Yeah, I'm excited for her. Excited for her, too. I know that, you know, her and I have both talked about that position's a tough position.
Agreed.
Because you want to do more. You know, you want to not just be Vanna White in the middle of Skip and Stephen A., but that's sort of what that position is designed for. You're a moderator, you tee up the question, and you get out of the way. And that's nothing against Carrie. That's sort of just how that position is designed. And for her, I think that it was an awesome opportunity. It's a great platform. It was great exposure. This is my words, not hers. But
right.
I know for me, even when I was sort of figuring out, you know, sort of vacillating between what I wanted to do as stay at ESPN or go to Fox or all that kind of stuff before, I really sort of solidified my position on Sports Nation. I was like, do I want to sit there and not say anything, you know, because the show isn't designed to have 3 stars. And that's just from my own experience. You know, Stephen A. and Skip are the stars, and you're there, and you're sort of just a fly. You're the viewer. You know, you can be the ombudswoman, and you can be the, you know, sort of the voice of the viewer, but that's sort of the capacity of the role. So for her, I'm excited for her to see her in a different space.
Yeah, that's well said on the moderator role of that show. What is, you know, you brought up, and I'll bring up your background a little bit, but you are one of the people who has worked for both ESPN and for Fox Sports. This is an open-ended question, Chris. What is the biggest difference in terms of the cultures of each place, at least as far as your opinion?
Well, let me, you know, do the proverbial I loved my time at both places, but I will actually mean this. I did love my time at ESPN. I mean, I was walking through a lobby the other day, and someone was like, I loved you on Sports Nation. I don't think anyone even knows that I have another job, to be honest. Like, I have two jobs now, and people still think I was only on Sports Nation. There is a platform that is unlike any other on being on ESPN. Even if it's on ESPN2 in the afternoon on the show, you know, where the demographic skews younger for a show like Sports Nation, there is a visibility there that I have yet to see elsewhere for myself personally. Like, that's where I gained, in my opinion, the most recognition, was by being on that show. My decision to leave ESPN was like nothing that they did. I would go back in a heartbeat, and that's not to say that I'm not happy at Fox. I make decisions based on what's best for me in that moment. And for me, the best decision was to go to Fox, also because Fox allowed me my mornings and my afternoons, because I wouldn't start, you know, my job at Fox until 5:30. So I had my entire day to explore other options. And living in Los Angeles in this business, there are a lot. And for me, I've always maintained this position that there is a window that will close quickly for me as a woman, that if I don't take advantage of these jobs now, that they might not be there later on down the road. So I may have my 15 minutes of so-called broadcast sub-fame, and I want to take advantage of that, which is why I don't mind waking up early and going to bed late, because there will come a time where I'm just looking to have a job. So having said that, ESPN, for me, I was a little bit, I had always wanted, I started at Fox Sports, okay, in HR, like that story I've already told to you. So Fox is family to me. Like, they gave me my first on-air job. They gave me my first national job. They gave me my first opportunity to work on an NFL sideline. They put me on the sideline of a Big Ten Network game that we didn't think anyone was even watching, and ended up turning out to be Michigan App State. Like, I had never even worked a game prior to that. So all of these big things that I have done in my even short tenure in this business have all been credited to Fox giving me a shot to begin with. So for me, Fox is family, and that's not taking anything away from ESPN, because some of my best friends and people I still talk to on a daily basis are people I met at ESPN. But Fox is, Fox lets me bring my dog to work. And that's sort of a microcosm of the difference for me of Fox and ESPN, where Fox feels like a home, and ESPN felt more like a business, and that was not the way they were running it. I mean, keep in mind the show I was working on.
Right.
It was a fun, lighthearted, sit at the kids' table kind of show. I mean, I wasn't even working, it's not like I was working on Outside the Lines or any of these more serious tenured or tempo kind of shows. So I don't want to be misrepresenting in any way or kind of overexpanding my sort of, you know, apologetic approach to this explanation that's convoluted at this point. But Fox feels like family. ESPN was a business, and that's sort of the difference for me of the two. But I would, you know, I would speak highly on both of them in just different ways.
First of all, I did not know this. You were the sideline reporter for Michigan Appalachian State?
Yes.
Wow.
It was my first ever sideline game for any sport. I mean, I had worked for the Rockies organization for the Fox Sports Regional. I was their in-game reporter, but I had never worked on a sideline, college football or, you know, even courtside for basketball. The only experience I had sort of in that field role reporter was for baseball. So I get a call, David Hill and, you know, Leon Schweier and all the people that were putting together the Big Ten Network, and they said, we want you to do sidelines for it. I was like, oh, my God, I wanted to break into football. Football had been my dream to do it. And so my first assignment there, obviously, is that Michigan App State game, and it's Tom Brenneman and Charles Davis are in the booth, and they had just come up off of working the Oklahoma-Boise State game, you know, the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah,
like,
right,
they had
right.
just come off of the previous season of having this amazing, you know, monumental game that lives in infamy and all that. So their next game is this game. So we get in the car afterwards. They're like, wow, we've got some, you know, from last season to now the start of this season, some incredible games. Like, Carissa, where does this rank for you? And I was like, well, this was my first ever game. They were like, what? This is the first? And I'm glad that they knew that after the fact, not before the broadcast. So they didn't think, like, what are these people doing putting some random, you know, 27-year-old on his choice? I think I was 26, probably. 26-year-old on the sideline with no experience. But anyways, yeah, so that was my first game.
Great, yeah.
And I think my indoctrination into coaches was Lloyd Carr at halftime when I was, you know, did my very novice question of, Coach, what adjustments are we going to make? You're going to make it halftime. He's like, a lot, and kept walking. I was like, okay.
That's a great, and it's a memorable answer by Lloyd Carr. Having lived in Ann Arbor for a year, I mean, that is a game that lives in infamy. That's amazing. That was your first sideline. I did not know that. That's very cool. Not very cool for Michigan alums, but still cool.
Yeah, exactly. well, they would have gotten their act together, not lost the next week against Oregon, they would have been all right. That was the year that I think it was LSU or Ohio State. Someone had two losses and ended up, you know, going to the national championship.
Exactly.
Game. So anyways.
Now, this last year, you worked a couple of. Is it how many NFL games did you have last year?
I had. What did I have? Did I have four?
Yeah, you had.
I was in London, Pittsburgh, Dallas. Yeah, I had four last year. Yeah, because when Erin goes and does the Super Bowl, then I take her assignment.
Yeah, or World Series, right?
Yeah, World Series. Excuse me.
Right. So, listen, that is obviously when it comes to sports, sideline reporting on NFL games is a big, big time assignment. Was it? The position itself, as you know, just draws so much commentary from fans, good, bad, and indifferent. For you, was it...
Are we still doing that? I feel like that narrative is worn out of, like, Barbie on the sideline. Aren't we past all that?
No, it's not really... I don't think it's a question of, like, Barbie on the sideline, but more for whatever reason, the sideline reporter draws, certainly in social media, you know, whether it's Erin, whether it's Pam Oliver, whether it's Sam Ponder, that position still... Maybe it's just a web traffic play, but it still draws a lot of attention. You would disagree with that? I mean, it's the narrative of, like, it's only pretty girl X on the sidelines, one thing, but people comment on sideline reporters oftentimes more than the analyst in the booth.
I wouldn't disagree with the observer commenting just in terms of, like, oh, who's this chick? She's hot, like that kind of stuff. I thought you were approaching it for, like, oh, well, what's the role of the sideline reporter? Like, what, you know, I thought you were looking at it through a lens of, is there a need for one?
No, when it's somebody who's doing the job and somebody really good, there's absolute. I mean, it's invaluable. You look at the work Doris Burke does.
Perfect.
Tafoya, Lisa Salter.
I'm glad you said that because yeah. I was like, am I really going to? We're still doing this, Richard. We have to defend that we need the sideline reporter. Okay, so.
My question for you is going to be: what was it? An enjoyable assignment? Did you have done a lot of studio work? Now you're on the sidelines of the NFL. That's a totally different reporting experience. Is that something you enjoy?
Absolutely. That same. I was lucky enough to, like, after my first year of doing the college sideline stuff, I got a full NFL package, 17 weeks, and I did that for 2 years. So I would go work Best Damn Sports Show through the week, Monday through Friday. Then I would go work a Big Ten game on Saturday. Then I would fly primarily to an NFC North assignment game. And in 2008, because I was the rookie reporter, I got a lot of Detroit Lions games, which we all know
right.
what happened there.
Right.
So at some point, you know, asking Rod Marinelli what adjustments you're going to make at halftime, and he goes, I like your perfume. I was like, well, that's going to be a problem. So I did that for 2 years and then went away from the sidelines. And then because of, you know, other responsibilities and like you said, like going more studio-based shows and then even to ESPN, which eradicated doing any NFL for me, I really, really enjoyed the experience of going back onto the sidelines last year. I was actually kind of nervous to go back and do it because I hadn't done it in a couple years, and not to mention it was the game of the week, and it was with Troy and Tom I was comfortable with because I had worked with Tom in the past, but the first game. Troy is fickle, and if you're on his side, then you're good. If you're not, then you never know if Troy likes you. So I was a little, and I say that with the utmost respect because I'm such a huge fan of his. But it's almost like one of those things. Like I'm never nervous around anyone, which is maybe I should probably have a little bit more of that in me and not be so all over the place. But I was nervous with Troy because he has such a high standard for everything that he does. I didn't want to disappoint him, and you know, the way that they do things was set, and the crew loves Aaron, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I just didn't want to disappoint anybody, so I was excited to have the opportunity to be back on the sideline, and it also meant doing a sit-down interview, which is my favorite part to be on. I love the game, that's great, but I like that the position of that reporter warrants a sit-down interview the day before, and doing sort of that long-form sit-down interview, whether it was with Antonio Brown or, you know, later on with like a Tony Romo or Dez Bryant. Like that's the part that I enjoy the most in that position and what opportunities it provides. I also got a chance to finally work or go even to London and work a game there, and it ended up being a great game. I mean, it was a Detroit Atlanta game towards the end,
right?
Where Mike Smith pretty much lost his job off that, but so that's not good for him. But yes, I really enjoy going back and working on the sideline for that.
Did you find that?
What happens? And I'm so sorry to anyone listening. I just ramble and ramble.
It's good
ramble,
though. It's
sometimes
a,
I don't even know if I'm answering your question.
But Krista,
get me back on track. I need medication.
It's a medication. Well, this is New York. We could easily get medication.
I think I should be tested for ADD. I'm not even joking.
Yeah, but again, Krista, this is a podcast, so it's essentially an infinite lane. So you're supposed.
Maybe that's actually where I should be.
Right.
TV podcast. I just ramble.
Right. Podcast. Why not the Krista Thompson podcast? I'm just listening.
No, I would only do it with you.
Fox has a $1 billion. They could probably create a podcast. First of all,
who's mad at you? Who's mad at you? Because we did this call this morning. I had told Clay Travis, because he's filling in for Dan Patrick,
right,
that I would
do a
segment with him this morning.
Right.
And I sent him a text yesterday. I said, I'm going to have to cancel on you. And I told him why. And he was like, that guy hates me. Why do you hate Clay Travis?
Well, you know, it's not hate. It's sort of it's first of all, it's professional. Personally, I don't know him, and actually seems like nice guy personally, clearly loves his kids and his wife, which is really the only thing ultimately in life that matters. But professionally, we see things through a very different prism. But I did say that, you know, Clay and I were going back and forth on Twitter, and he reached out to me, which I appreciated. So we decided to dial it down a notch because we were essentially doing a little too much performance art where we were fighting for other people, and it wasn't benefiting us. I'm sure you know all about that. So
got it. Okay.
So
you're a tough cookie. I mean, there's a lot of people in my life that think that you're displeased with them, or you know, not speaking too highly of them. But
I love
whatever. Enough about other people.
Well, actually, that could be a very interesting podcast. All right, listen. Let me again, as I said in the intro, and as I'll say to you now, the last year when we talked for SI.com, it was, and this is no bullshitting you, this one of my favorite interviews I did, because you ultimately are just trying to find some authentic moments when you interview subjects, and I thought when we talked, you were just you were either remarkably honest or you were ultimately bullshitting me brilliantly. So then you're a great actress either way.
Oh, I'm not a great actress, so I will take the former
right
part of that comment. So
it's a total compliment. And one of the topics that we talked about was your interaction with people in the business. And you had basically said you had gotten to the point in your life, as you hit your 30s, that you didn't want to be in places where you'd look across the room and have any issues with anybody. You wanted to sort of clear all the BS basically out of your life. For a while, as you talked about with me, there was some tension, rightly or wrongly, between you and Michelle Beadle. You resolved that, or it seemed that you resolved that when you two talked, I think, prior to the ESPYs. At this point, do you talk to Michelle, or are you at a point where you resolved it there and both of you have moved on? Because to me, having talked to Michelle many times, it's interesting. I find you two very similar. You're both very honest. You're both very smart. You're both very forthright. In another life, I actually think you would really be friends or really enjoy each other's company. At least that's my take.
I don't disagree with you on some of those points. Michelle and I don't talk, and that's not for nothing. I mean, there's no extraction of that comment that, you know, warrants further explanation other than we aren't friends. But my thing is, I just didn't want to be enemies. So when I first got to ESPN, and I think I told you a little bit of the backstory with her and I, when I was working on Numbers Never Lie and she was just working on Sports Nation, our pods, like how ESPN is set up in the newsroom, I mean, I was no less than, you know, 10 feet away from her on a daily basis. And she was nothing short of amazing. She was super sweet, would every day would say hi. Well, Michelle's not like a sweet, warm, like, you know, rainbows and unicorns kind of person, but like in her way of being sweet, she was. And so we didn't have an issue until fast forward then, you know, she thinks I'm siding with Aaron and all this crap came out in Deadspin and like all those things, which don't even matter now, like most of that stuff. But what did matter in that is that there became the camp. I was Camp Aaron, and she felt like she was isolated on an island, and it was like her against us. And I was like, this is absurd. So anyways, so then she leaves, and when I took over for Sports Nation, first of all, Michelle had a huge fan base.
Right.
People love her. Her fans were innumerable. And here I am. My apprehension of taking the position is because already I'm set up to fail because of people's admiration for her in that role. Admiration's like I'm acting like she's the president, but you know what I mean. Like they loved her in that role.
Yeah, and on television, she had a great popularity with that. I mean, that show was good.
Absolutely. And so, but in taking that, not one word was spoken between her and I. Like when I used to fill in for her prior to all of the Camp Aaron nonsense, she used to say stuff on social media like, oh, my girl, Carissa's going to fill in for me. Like, she was so supportive and so sweet and would always back me. When I took over the position, not a word, she didn't say anything to me. So at that point, I was like, well, it's clear the line has been drawn in the sand. Like, you're not interested in any sort of support or reconciliation of something. I don't even know how the hell this happened. So with that stuff at the ESPYs, I just felt like I needed look, I've grown up a lot. I still have a lot of work to do, but I would hope that just with age comes a certain level of maturity in handling situations. And for me, I'm at a completely different place in my life. I was going through a divorce. I was like being like out of control in a lot of aspects in my life when I was working at ESPN, and I was all over the map. And for me, I am psychologically, I'm a completely different person and a lot more stable now, than I was back then because I was going through so much stuff personally that I never made anybody privy to. So for me, seeing her last year, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I just wanted to sort of squash it. She was gracious, and I don't know what her opinion is. Her interpretation of that is like, oh, this bitch is going to try to apologize and you know, hate me for it. I don't know what her takeaway from that was, but at least for me, I felt like I had addressed the elephant in the room. I apologize for whatever I did or didn't do and then move on, because it really honestly didn't warrant that much attention, and I don't know how it even got to that point. So that's my whole situation with that. And for her and her opinion of me, honestly, not that I don't care, it's just it doesn't occupy any of my space anymore.
I appreciate your recounting that. I know she read that interview. My sense, having not asked her specifically about it, is that it was, if nothing else, it gave her a sense of where you were coming from. But yeah, your lives obviously are distinctly different. You don't work together, et cetera. Independent of Aaron Andrews and Michelle Beadle, this is an open-ended question. Carissa, how competitive is the sports television business? And this is not, I'm asking you, how competitive is it between women? But in general, how competitive is it between on-air talent? And have you found it to be, you know, have you found most people that you like and you trust? Or is it a very competitive business in the way it's super competitive to make the NBA and be one of the, you know, 12, 13 people on a roster?
It's an interesting question, and my answer to that question has changed since diversifying my role in television. Ever since taking this extra job, the pressure that I feel to maintain a stronghold in the world of sports has lessened, and that's not because I don't care at all. I welcome anybody. There was a quote one time. I think Michael, did Strahan put that? I don't know. It was something like, I'm not interested in competing with anybody. I want everyone to succeed. That's what the quote was. And it came from him, and I thought that was so great. I mean, here's a guy. I've always loved him and had such a, you know, great level of respect for him. But obviously his football playing career, and then he goes and does Kelly, and then he, you know, just excels in that position. And then he takes on GMA. It's like there's, like, the guy does everything. And this is a guy who still has such levels of humility and genuineness to him that I really try not to emulate, because we do different things, but if nothing else, learn and watch from him, where there is room for everyone. And for me, taking the extra job, it sort of moved my focus away from just being so fixated on, like, how do I stay in sports? It's like, well, I'm going to do a little bit of this, and I'm going to do a little bit of this, and if I'm lucky enough, I can stay in both. I think if I was only in sports still, Richard, honestly, and over at Fox, as we try to, hit our stride and find our place, I think I would have a little bit more anxiety about it. But since I have other things, I don't have any children, so I can't make this comparison, but I can imagine. I know you have twins, so it's a little bit different. But if you have your first child, you're fixated on every single thing they do, and you're worried about everything.
Right.
And then you have another child, and it's like, you know, the focus lessens a little bit on, you know, the craziness that you feel about, oh, if Johnny fell, it's like, well, Johnny's going to get up. He's fine. Then by the time the third kid comes around, you're just hoping that Johnny, like, isn't lost. So it's sort of, the more things that I have on my plate, the less focused I am on this quote-unquote competitiveness. I think that there is room for everyone, and I think that if, you know, you do, there's a time and a place, though, and again, I mentioned it earlier, there will be a time where I was working with this cute intern, Haley. She asked if she could shadow me every Tuesday when I was at Fox. And I was like, Haley, I hope that you take my job one day, you know, and I know that when we spoke back in the article, has that been a year already?
September 2014.
Oh, okay, yeah. So almost a year ago, I remember saying that if I'm lucky enough to sort of like stay in this position, then I will be grateful, because I know what I said to you in the article about the one person that wasn't necessarily very nice to me when I was coming up.
Right.
And I just, I've made mistakes, and I probably could have been nicer along the way, and there's different things that I would have done. But for the most part, I've tried to maintain that I should always know that there's someone younger, someone prettier, and someone smarter that is going to take my job. And even if that means me helping facilitate them get it, then I'm okay with passing that on, because there's going to come a time, and that's okay. That's just the evolution of it. But I think that's another reason for me why I just try to do some stuff outside of sports as well, so I don't necessarily feel the pinch of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, the hope for you then would be that Haley eventually, let's say, gets like the Today Show anchor job and then hires you when you're like 58.
No, Haley can't get that. That's the job I want. Remember, she can have my old jobs. As I try to move towards a morning show host,
right,
or a position that I've always desired, she can take my other jobs.
Laura can't keep that job forever, Carissa. I have to think it's going.
He does a hell of a job at it, and
That's your dream job, essentially, right?
My dream, absolutely. I've always wanted. Well, I always wanted. This sounds. And I don't mean like to have any sort of like hubris or pompous tone about this. I always wanted my dream job growing up, and I told you about the little video I made when I was 11,
yep,
like with the paper towel,
tennis ball,
blah blah blah. I always wanted to be an NFL sideline reporter, like that was, and I wanted to work at ESPN, and I wanted to meet Chris Berman, and that was my dream. And I feel very, very, very lucky, without sounding annoying about it, that I got to do that. And I think for me, I've tried to be like, okay, what's my next dream, you know? And that's not being dismissive at all of the current jobs I'm in, because if this is what I end up doing for the rest of my life, is sort of a hybrid entertainment sports role, like, I'd be so damn lucky. But I also know that if a chair opened up on a morning show, like, that would be my next dream. But it doesn't mean it at all that I'm dismissing my current role. And who knows? Like, one thing I have learned, I got married. I thought I was going to be married for the rest of my life. That's, My parents have been married since they were 18. I thought that I was going to follow down the same path. Guess what? It didn't happen. So my goals or my dreams, like, can deviate. And I'm a little bit of a hippie this way. I was joking with someone that every 2 years of my life, something changes. Either a boyfriend, I move, or a different job. So two's that magical number that I sort of have this affinity for change, even indirectly. So who knows?
Well, I wish you luck at that. I don't think that's an impossibility by any means in terms of a big chair. Let me ask you about this, and I told you before we taped this that I would ask you, and I appreciate, again, you talking about this because it's something that listeners should know exists, especially on the social media component. You and ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Williams dated for some time. It was a serious relationship. Mm-hmm. You were public about that, and what that meant ultimately was social media comments. I remember you telling me that you said that people would be appalled at the kind of shit that you and Jay had to deal with as an interracial couple. Jay is black, obviously you're white. How bad would it get or could it get on social media?
It still is bad. I mean, we've been broken up for a year, and I still hear about it. And Jay's still in my life, and I'm so fortunate and lucky that I have someone like him in my life, and independent of whatever label you put on it, when we were officially together and officially a couple, Jay was used to it, and not by necessarily publicly dating a white girl, but just racism and the appalling things that people said. I had never experienced that before. I had A, never dated a black guy, B, never dated a colleague, and C, for the trifecta, never dated a former athlete black colleague. Like, there was like all of these like components to that, and so for me, I didn't realize the depth that it's and it's not because I'm not a dumb person. I'm aware that racism still exists. I just didn't know the ignorance and the depths to which it still was rampant. Like, I would get, like, throughout, and this is somebody like me who didn't even have a large Twitter following, you know, I can imagine people who are actually famous,
right.
And in, you know, the when Seal and Heidi Klum were together, like, I can't imagine sort of that level of celebrity and dealing with those kind of things. But for me, I think it was just eye-opening. I was like, oh, shit, this is real. Like, I would... And at first, like, I wanted to defend it, but then I'm like, you know what, there's just an ignorance in the guy that's saying it with the egg avatar or with three followers or saying that he's a father and that he, you know, loves Jesus, and then in the same breath would say things like, you love dating N-word, or things like a mud shark. I was like, what the hell is that? I didn't even know some of the vernacular, and I felt
right.
I was like, am I ignorant to this? But I was sad. Actually, it kind of just made me sad. And Jay's obviously been through a lot of criticism, given everything in his life. I mean, with the trials, you get the tribulations, and he's a lot more mature at handling that. I think self-deprecation is also something that he defaults to a lot with different things in his life, and I've learned from him in that capacity as well. But I just was sad about it more than anything else. And I still get comments. Like, if I make a comment, like, even not necessarily being with him, I still get comments like, oh, you only like black guys, and like that, like, that still happens on a daily basis. So
wow. I mean,
when I was in London, there was this awesome cab driver. He had like picked me up, and it was like this fun sort of like moment in the streets of London, the cobblestone street, whatever, and it was just a cool like picture, and I remember posting it, and like literally I got all of these things being like, you only let black guys touch you, you love black people, blah blah blah. I was like, Jesus, let it go. So
that, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It would bum you out, especially if you had to just deal with that on a daily basis. But this sort of goes to my next question, and this is one of the things I really respect about you. You don't clearly let anybody impact sort of how you live and your decisions. You have a big Instagram account. 60,000 people are following that. I mean, it's a huge number. And you're open with your life there. You know, I know many men and women in the business who would want to keep their personal lives away from social media, that you wouldn't see them on vacation, you wouldn't see them in a bathing suit, you wouldn't see them hanging out with their friends. You are the opposite, and that's very interesting to me, and I think incredibly cool. But I did want to ask you, you know, you make choices, obviously, especially on Instagram, to open yourself up, or I should say open your life up to other people. Why, you know, and this is not, I'm not asking you this with any judgment, but I'm just curious, why have you made that decision?
Well, it's probably the bathing suit ones that are warrant the most explanation, and I will, how am I going to say this without sounding like I just, let me just, who cares, I'm going to say, it's not that I don't give a shit what people say
right.
or think about me. I care tremendously. The people I really care about who think about me are the people that sign my checks, and there still is a responsibility that I have to employers to be the best representation of myself and the company that I work for. I can't be so erratic, you know, or just haphazard about my life, like, oh, I just don't give a fuck, so I'm just going to do whatever I want. No, I still have, and I still have parents that would be like, what are you doing if I acted in a certain manner? So I am sedulous about my life up until a certain point. So my Instagram account prior to taking the extra job was private. When I was only in the sports space, and this is actually, when you asked me if you could ask me this question, I thought about it. I was like, of course, I'm an open book. But I was thinking about, why is it that when I was just in sports, I was so guarded about personality? I wasn't guarded about. I, you know, sort of like, oh, like I was, you know, open about myself, but I would never post a picture of me in a bathing suit or whatever because I was afraid of that stereotype, which exists for a reason, or the criticism that would come, like, oh, you only have the job because you're X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I've been on air, what, since 2006? So almost 10 years of being, and of that 10 years, 9 of it being in sports. So up until last year, so 9 years, I guarded my image and tried to image in terms of the sexuality part, right? Like I never was seen, with the exception of like someone's, only because I was with Aaron, no one even knew who I was, when we were in Miami, like had pictures of us in a bathing suit. Like up until then, like I you'd never have seen me in a bathing suit. You wouldn't see me doing Playboy or Maxim or any of those kind of magazines because there was a direction that I wanted my career to go. You would have never heard of me dating an athlete ever. Like I still maintain that I don't date athletes that are currently playing, and the only athlete I had dated, you know, even up to now has been Jay. But that is something I was very meticulous about because I wanted to be credible, and I didn't want to be lumped into that group of girls that was just getting the job or opportunities because of, you know, putting yourself out there, quote unquote, sexually. So that's the setup. So for 9 years I didn't do that, and I was just in sports. Then fast forward to I get this job at Extra. And there's a different feeling in the entertainment space, that it's okay. Maria Menounos has been in her bathing suit hundreds of times. She's gotten ads for Hawaiian Tropic for being in a bathing suit.
Right.
She's got endorsement deals for being in a bathing suit. Juliana Rancic, I mean, has been, you know, in a bathing suit with her family and posts pictures on her Instagram account. Cab Sadler, who works for E! Like, there's all of these examples who I have utmost respect for all of them. But them being in a bathing suit and working in entertainment doesn't come with the same criticism as me being in a bathing suit working in sports, and it's obvious. It's the men's world versus the women's world for the most part. The viewer in the entertainment world is primarily women, and the viewer in sports world, of course, is their blanket statements. So don't say, like, oh, women aren't in sports. I'm just mean, like, the audience is predominantly men.
Right, right, yeah.
So for me, once I opened up that entertainment door, it became acceptable for me to do that. If I don't have to do it, but it was okay. Like, Extra is not going to say to me, take that bathing suit picture down. Fox isn't going to say to me, take that bathing suit down, because they're a little bit more liberal, if you will, which is the pun intended about Fox, but like they're a little
right.
bit more liberal. I'm like, you can be you. Like, there's no judgment. I mean, there's obviously, there's up on FoxSports.com every day, there's like the babe of the week. You're not going to see that at ESPN, and that's fine. And I'm indifferent to which you prefer or you don't prefer, but my employers won't ever pull me into the office, whereas at ESPN they might have. I don't know. And that's not saying anything good or bad about either one. There's just a different approach. So I felt more comfortable, I felt more comfortable once the entertainment door of my life opened to be like, okay, you know what? Like, my audience isn't just male, and I don't have to tiptoe. And I had been doing sports for 9 years, and at this point, people know who I am. You know, I don't have a track record of dating athletes. I don't have a track record of being this girl that's going to just try to sell herself off looks. Like, hopefully, I'm not a hardcore journalist, and I've never pretended to be. But I hope that whatever role you want to define me in is sports has been built on hard work, and I'm decent enough at my job to keep getting opportunities, but none of that based on appearance in me being in a bathing suit. Does that make sense?
Totally. That is about as good a way to describe it as I've ever heard anyone. What comes up to me, and this is pretty interesting, is there a part of all this that feels, first of all, what you said about ESPN is interesting. That's not to knock them. But
I do not in any way want to be like, oh, well, you can't do that at ESPN.
Right.
No,
but they're more.
I could have. Who knows?
Yeah, but I think they're more. Who knows if they would have said anything? I think they are more conservative than Fox. One of the great things about working for Fox, from all the Fox people I talk to, is that they really do let you be your own individual. You really, you know, if you look at Erin, she's been able to do commercials, does Dancing with the Stars. Strahan does his thing with Kelly. Bradshaw does commercials. I mean, they're great with quote-unquote talent, the word you don't love, but they really are great with that. What comes to mind for me, though, with all this is, does it feel more liberating? If nothing else, do you feel like you don't have to play the game of I'm always, you know, I always have to be a little more conservative because I'm working in sports, or I always have to sort of watch whatever imaging I'm doing, and, you know, I'm very comfortable with who I am, how I look like, and my Instagram reflects all that.
I think it's no coincidence that maybe this let me rewind. I don't feel more liberated because I felt restrained before, but I think I just feel more liberated in my life in general. I feel very comfortable with who I am. It just so happens to be that I'm in a place now professionally, whether it's entertainment or at my present sports company, that I can do those things. I don't feel more liberated in the sense it's like, oh, the chains are off and now I'm free of ESPN's, you know, stronghold. No,
right.
I wouldn't. Prior to being at ESPN, I worked at Yahoo Sports or NFL Network or Fox. Like, I would have never posted a picture of me in my bathing suit because I was on a path to stay away from those stereotypes because I wanted to build a reputation based off of the work I was doing. Again, why I didn't date athletes. Like, I wanted to stay in the lane of I'm here to do my job. I think, honestly, if I'm being very candid, part of the reason that I got married was in a way to be like, I'm not here for any of these guys or all of those the things that happen. That's not to take anything away from my husband. I loved him dearly. My marriage didn't work out for other reasons. But I think that for me it was like, no, I'm here to work. Like, I'm married, I got a man at home, I'm here to do this, this, and this. And for me, it wasn't about, I guess I was trying to prove to everybody that you didn't have to go. And for people that wanted to pose in Playboy or all that other stuff, like, more power to them, that's just not the route that I wanted. And I think I overcompensated so much that, you know, wearing turtlenecks on the sideline was happening at one point. Or dyeing my hair black. We all know what happened there.
Yeah, you talked about that and Deadspin. Carissa Thompson Carissa Thompson continues down suicidal path to Frumpyville. Was there
exactly? Hell, that is a great title. I mean, it still rings in my head, but now it rings in my head in a very comedic way, and it's a good part of the journey that I've been lucky enough to go on, and I hope to continue to be on. But I in no way try to pretend that anything that I do people really care about, but all that matters to me is that I just happen to be finding myself in the journey of life. It's so cheesy. People make fun of me, and I told you this, like, for being all positive and crap now.
I know.
I'm at a much better place in my life personally, that it's easier for me. I used to make, there's a lot of things I used to make fun of, like inspirational quotes, and then, you know, girls standing, like, posing and, like, telling me what their outfit of the day was. I used to be like, who cares what your outfit of the day is? Now I'm like, I'm wearing these pants, these shoes, and this top, and I'll tell you what I'm doing, because, again, in the entertainment world, there's a market for that. You can get a free shirt if you just put a picture of the shirt on. I'm like, I am such a sellout. I have totally sold out. I'm telling you what shoes I'm wearing, all that kind of stuff. So I'm the first one to say, and because my biggest thing for my own self is I never want to seem hypocritical, where it's like, wait, weren't you the person that used to make fun of that? And I will be like, yep, I was. And I have no problem, you know, saying that I used to have these certain things and I was never going to do. And if I'm doing them now, then you know what? So be it. And I will own up to that. But I just think that it's my own journey, and I'm becoming more comfortable with who I am in all aspects. So if that means posting a picture in my bathing suit and people think, like, that's not good for your career, well, then fuck it. Like, I've been lucky enough to do this for 10 years that I hope that that's not going to be the reason I don't get my next job.
Right. And I will say that when I talked to you in September, you're so positive and seem so healthy. You know, I walked out of my New York office, and I really, at least for 20 minutes, tried to drop the cynicism. So those 20 minutes, I feel like you did inspire me to try to do better.
Well, that's good. Wait, that makes me happy.
But
your life has changed too.
Oh my God! Yeah,
kids,
yeah. In all honesty, I have I have young twins, and you can't everything else that you do doesn't matter. The only thing honestly that matters is their health and their happiness. And I don't often talk about my personal life, but I will tell you this because you've been so honest. It's like literally the greatest moment of my day it happens twice. One, when you walk into wake them up and they're just so excited to see you. It's like they start their day. They're just so like thrilled to like see the people that they love, which is you, which is an amazing feeling. And then when you get home and you walk in the door and it's like these two little beautiful people start jumping up and down because you walk in. It's like there's literally nothing closer to, or at least nothing closer that I've experienced to pure love than those two moments. So it's very hard it's very hard to be cynical when things like that happen.
It's so awesome. And what you said earlier wasn't lost on me when you were saying, you know, that about Clay. Like, he loves his family and he loves his kids, and really that is all that matters. I don't have a husband and I don't have kids. I hope to have them someday. But I have a dog, and, like, I get excited when my dog is excited to see me. So I can only imagine, you know, how that feeling is amplified.
It is. It's the same thing. I mean, I love dogs. It's literally, it's just sort of like unconditional love, which is what, if you have a pet, cat or dog or whatever, obviously it's different. Baby's not a cat or a dog. But it's the same thing.
No.
It's really,
yeah.
Love is love.
I think that's the whole thing, that honestly, some of it may be cheesy and some of it may be selling out and some of it, like, but all of it for me and all the different phases that I go through are not contrived. Like, they are genuine and they might not always be perfect, but for me, I hope that if anything, people are like, oh, she's like a real chick. Like, I just want to hopefully do what I love to do as long as I can possibly do it. And however or whoever has an opinion on it, then that's, you know what, that's great. As long as I have employers that want to keep employing me, then I'm a happy chick. And if my parents aren't disappointed in me, that's the other thing. Like, I'm big on that. Like, I don't want to ever do anything that my parents would be disappointed by, you know?
All right, Chris, I have two you've been with us close to an hour, so I have two last questions for you, and then we will let you go on with your day.
I know. I ramble. I'm so sorry.
No, it's not. Yeah, this is good. We need rambling. That's what a podcast is good for. One of the people, you know, you're talking about sort of knowing who you are, and, you know, being unafraid to say things and to sort of just really be your true self. Someone who at least comes like that across the screen is Katie Nolan, who I know that you are sort of a huge admirer of. Fox just re-upped, or at least they're planning to do a second season of Garbage Time. I wanted to ask you, someone who's been in television for a while, why does Katie Nolan work on TV? Because she's sort of unique in the space. There's really not anybody like her age, doing what she's doing, and she is connected with an audience so far, and it's pretty impressive.
No, I love Katie. I think Katie, I like Katie for a lot of reasons, but what I like her for is because she says all the things that I can't say. And why I say that is because I think I talked to you about this before. There's places that I want my path of my career to go. And if I said, and again, like as open as I am with my life and you know, unapologetic about certain things, I'm also calculated in the direction that I want my career to go. And if I do things the right way and luck aligns with opportunity, then hopefully they end up there. But that said, I can't say some of the things that I want to say. Like, there's times where I say things, I'm like, oh, shit, I really hope I didn't have a microphone on or anybody heard that. Like most people, okay, because not everything you're going to say is something that's for public consumption. But Katie, why she was hired off her original YouTube videos is that she can say all that. I mean, she reminds me of Michelle in that way, right, where, and even more so because Fox does let Katie go places that I don't think ESPN would go, to bring it back to our earlier conversation, and
right.
That's just a fact. She is allowed to, and she's given a license, to be who she wants to be or say whatever she wants to say or challenge. Hell, she challenged Fox. She challenged her own network, which some people are fans of, some people aren't. But I think that Katie, there is a place for people like Katie, and it makes for good TV. I enjoy watching people that don't have to have a governor on their mouth, and I will, by my own admission, put a governor on my mouth for some things just because of where I want my path to go. But if she is comfortable with the things that she says, which obviously she is, and she's doing it authentically, again, which she is, then there's absolutely a space for her, and there's a lot more space for people like her. I just don't think people have the balls to say it. Because I think that people are very concerned with what – we're human beings. I mean, even, you know, your job is to be a critic in some aspects, and even as a critic who's the one doing the judging, you still are human and you care about what people think about you. Now, the levels are varying. Some people, you know, I don't know how much you care about what people think about you, but even though I maintain this position of, like, I don't really care, because it depends on who's saying it. I mean, the asshole who's making comments of racial slurs and that kind of, I really don't care what that person thinks. But I do care that, you know, Karen in, you know, I don't know, Sacramento is like, oh, you offended me by saying this or something like that. That bothers me if I genuinely offended somebody. But if you don't care that you offend people or hurt people's feelings, then that does not to say that you're insensitive. But, like, I just say she is very comfortable saying what she says, and she has conviction, and she stands by it.
Right.
And I think that there's absolutely a place for that if you have the guts to do it.
Agreed.
I don't have the guts to do it.
Hopefully, you know, I know I could only speak for myself, is that hopefully, like, people respect what I do. I would think, I know that's the case for you, and I would think even as sort of ballsy as Katie Nolan is, I would think that would be the same for her as well, I think. Ultimately, she'll be a podcast guest one of these days down the road, and I'll get into that with her. I'll ask her. The last one, again, since we're now on 62 minutes and at a certain point, you probably
we
need
ran
some...
out of tape? What are we on here?
Nah, trust me. I think Schefter and Rachel Nichols, that might have been like an hour and 40 minutes. You know, trust me. You're not even close.
I love them.
You're not
I,
even...
I love Rachel so...
She's
I love
great.
Both of them.
Yeah, they're both really... They were both great guests and good.
Oh, I just love them. I have such... Rachel is who I will be in my next life, which, like, someone who, you know, her career arc has been tremendous, but just the journalistic side and, like, working at the Globe, like, I never had that background, and so... Nor do I think that I'm the type of person that could do that, but I have such a level of respect for Rachel and what she does.
She's fantastic. Anyways, also, by the way, also a parent of twins as well, raising
twins.
I know.
Crazy.
Let's go, Carissa. Get on.
And how about she, like, popped out the kids, and I saw her at the Garden. It was during the height of Jeremy Lin, and I was like, you just had kids? I mean, she's great.
Yeah, she's ridiculous. Her time management skills are absurd, I'm sure. All right, finally... Fox has made a lot of changes or will be making some changes. Someone you know from ESPN, Jamie Horowitz, has come in and sort of to oversee a lot of the content on
You mean my favorite person on the planet?
You love
Amy
that
Horowitz?
Guy. Right.
Let's not downplay his introduction. Can we ramp that up a little bit?
Yeah, let's call. I mean, listen, the man who changed the face of morning television. How's that?
Thank you.
All right.
There we go. The creator of the sports station.
Not for the better. Although you did say to me when we did talk that he's the person you learned the most about from TV, because he, he put it, basically got a whiteboard a couple months after he got the Sports Nation job, wrote down everything. You know, he did this exercise, which is a pretty interesting one. You know, everything that you are about, everything that you want, put on this whiteboard, and we'll figure out, quote unquote, what your brand is.
Thank you for
is.
Listening to me, Richard, by the way. I really love you for listening to me.
Yeah,
in my soliloquies, I wonder how much is actually extracted or retained.
That was really interesting to me. It pains me to praise Jamie, but that's kind of a good idea, actually.
Is this a systemic problem? What's happening with Jamie?
Well, no, listen. I personally like Jamie a lot personally.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah, he's a charming guy. I've talked to him away from all this. I'm not the biggest fan of some of the television that he's done. But he knows that. We actually, incredibly enough, away from business, we get along. And the first time I thought when we would meet in person, I thought it was going to be like Pacino and De Niro in Heat, but it was pretty good. It was actually much more pleasant.
Oh my God, so how great is that movie, by the way?
Fantastic.
You know, Kate Mannellini's actually off of La Cienega here in Los Angeles, is that restaurant where they filmed that.
Oh, is that right?
Ooh,
oh,
yeah.
That.
I went there just because of my affinity for the movie, and I tried to, in my mind, replay it. I mean,
you needed somebody else to be on the other side of that. Like
I needed someone else.
Brian
Scalabrine.
Maybe you and Brian Scalabrine could have done that scene.
Brian Scalabrine would be incredible. I for sure am going to be Pacino, and he can be De Niro.
Right. Pacino's the cooler one of that. So basically, what I want to finish up with is that it's very clear that Fox is going to make some changes when it comes to their programming, probably Fox Sports Live. Unfortunately, there's been some cuts there, so some news people are gone. The question I have for you is, as Fox heads forward, and we can specifically take it to Fox Sports Live, what do you think the next iteration is for the show you're working on, and maybe for you within the show that you're working on?
If I had the answer to that, I would be the placard on Jamie's office would say Carissa Thompson. It's above my pay grade. I have no idea, and I'm not creative enough to sort of restructure or realign or rehire or fire or anything that's going to go on over there over the next few months or year. I just hope that I'm a part of the plan. I don't know what the plan will be. But I hope that, and I trust, at least until the expiration of my contract, which then agent to the stars, Nick Khan, hopefully will, pitch me and re-up my contract with the blessing of the higher powers at Fox.
He wants another Rolls Royce, so he will figure that out, I'm sure.
I said to Nick, I was like, how many clients do you have? I mean, you got to leave some for other people. This is unfair at this point in the game. But I love Nick. Literally has been one of the greatest people in my life. When I was going through my divorce, he helped me find a divorce lawyer. Like, he's been
like
far, but like, no, seriously, like, and I know that you like joke about Nick. Nick is one of the dearest people in my life and somebody that honestly, like, forget an agent. Like, who cares about that? He just, I have such a level of respect for
him.
Yeah,
and no bullshitting you. Having talked to Nick about you, he's incredibly fond of you. So it's what you're saying is no surprise, and the empathy, the warmth that he has for you is, at least when I've talked to him, it's very clear.
Well, that's good to know. I appreciate that, but I just it's more on my end for him. But anyway, so I hope that I'm still there when my contract is up. But I definitely want. I'm excited. Here's the deal: like Jamie coming in for me, just because I totally trust his ability and respect what he's able to do, whether you like the shows he puts on the air or whether you don't. I love his ability to go into a space and be able to I look at it as a coach, right, where you go onto a team and you look at the personnel that you've been given and you throw out the current playbook and you're able to move someone from offense to defense. You're able to move someone who's never played – you know, the quarterback position into the star position on the field. You're able to sort of realign and reset and work with what you have, and or you can add it or extract depending on what, you know, you're able to do under the salary cap or with contracts, et cetera. I'm making sports analogies just to prove the point. He's a head coach, And he does an amazing job about putting personnel in the right position. And to the point where I make the offense and defense analogy, because you could have someone that's been playing offense their whole life, and he comes in, he's like, what are you doing on offense? Like, you needed to be on defense a long time ago. And then they excel in that position. So I think that I'm excited. I don't think I'm excited. I know I'm excited about what changes are ahead. I know that the building is excited, and he's got the support of Eric and everyone else around him to sort of do whatever he needs to do to make this thing work. But it really, in a circuitous way, goes back to the beginning of what we talked about and Fox feeling like a family. That I hope he feels that too when he arrives, but definitely that we're all in this together, in the cheesy way of how I say I hope to have a husband one day. Like, we're teammates. Like, I want to win with you. So however we need to get to that point, like working together, will definitely be something that I'm looking forward to, as far as, because he's so creative. And I definitely have, in the midst of taking on this other job, I think that I've fallen victim sometimes of just going through the motions and waiting for the next change, that I want to be part of the change in the sports capacity of my career, and not just show up and be just that moderator position. I think that that's never something that I've wanted to do, which is why I didn't take it at first take. But I think in taking on the job at Extra, it was sort of like, okay, that's something new. I'm going to put my focus there. And when I go to Fox, I know what my role is, and it's to tee up and it's to have fun and all that kind of stuff. But I need to push myself and challenge myself in that space, and that's just a personal goal that I have as well. So I'm excited to see about it. Again, rambling, so much rambling.
It's fine.
And I've only had half a coffee. Now I'm going to go paint my face and be on an entertainment show.
Nice.
But I cannot thank you enough for having me. I really, really appreciate it. You know I adore you, and you probably don't like the sappiness of it, but thank you for being supportive.
I don't mind the sap. It pains me more that you said so many nice things about Jamie Horowitz than you being sappy to me. I can handle the latter. The former says, "All right,
it's
so let's
not just Jamie. It's just changes in general.
No,
Jamie,
you are
the match for the change.
You're a positive person, and people need positive people in their lives. All right, Carissa Thompson is a Fox Sports host and reporter. You can see her on Fox Sports Live, not every night of the week, but many nights of the week. She's also a co-host for the syndicated entertainment news show Extra. If you watch Extra, you will see her on that show interviewing a lot of famous people. Carissa, we can't thank you enough for joining us on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Continued success and continued good mental health.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Sorry I used up all your tape or whatever we're using.
We're good. I think we'll be good. Thank you, Carissa.
Right, have a good day.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, back to wrap things up. Our thanks to Carissa Thompson for giving us all that time. But first of all, that was long. It's my fault because some of my questions were a little too windy, I would say. So you can blame me for that. But I think Carissa is really interesting. I mean, I'm not BSing here. I find her to be refreshingly honest in a business. And I'm not saying that everybody in the business isn't honest, but a lot of people are sort of like, it's not like anything you don't know. People sort of have a, what am I trying to say? Like
they have a business exterior,
yeah,
and they don't
exactly
want to ruin the reputation.
Perfectly. Or they're not programmed, but they're packaged a little bit. And I just think she's interesting because I don't find her packaged.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. She's interesting. And a lot of things she said, where she's clearly very open and has a lot to say, makes her a great host on TV. And it's also – her networks have to take a little bit of a risk when they hire her because they know she is so open. It's a blessing, and it can – I mean, it obviously has not proven to be a curse.
It won't be a curse for Extra because they kind of – she was – that's where – that was really interesting, and she's totally right that in Hollywood and entertainment, the idea that you show people who you are behind the scenes – and listen, there's no lie here. Chris Thompson's a beautiful-looking woman. That's going to be valuable to the Extras of the world. They want – she's right about Maria Menounos. I mean, you want Maria Menounos walking around sort of showing that she's a beautiful woman. It helps that product.
Right. Helps the product. And a lot of times when you're doing entertainment, you're covering, you know, these actors
right.
and stuff and people.
Openings, premieres.
Right. And your goal is to try and get that human side of these you know, actors and people in the entertainment world. And right. if you're shutting yourself off, then those people aren't going to open up to you either. So it's kind of a give and take, I guess.
Should I have asked her about, like, is there a difference between interviewing, like, a Clooney versus a Russell Wilson or something like that or no?
No, I don't think so. Let's stick to sports on this podcast. All right. The thing I'm most impressed with is her schedule. Sheesh. Yeah. Waking up and doing two shows, you know, very regularly, you know, working those types of hours cannot be easy.
Essentially, like, if I – so you do the math on this, it's like as the phone rings in the studio – 6 hours of sleep, basically. Maybe.
Yeah, basically, and 2 hours to exercise. She clearly, you know, I don't know if she cooks or whatever. You know, does her laundry.
You could do if you're to me. If you're like 32, 33, you can do that. I don't know if you can do that at 40.
You can't do that for the rest of your life, and she knows that, and so that's probably why she took this opportunity. And you have to look up to her for that, respect her for that.
All right, listen, we're gonna pull out of here now because Bette has been here far too long.
I've had 3 coffees, and I'm half awake as. Chris sounded.
First of all, yeah, the fact that we talked to her, it was 6:30 a.m. Pacific time when we started this. She was pretty awake for that. Yeah, as we finish this up, it's 10:50 a.m. As we tape this. All right, anyway.
10:50 a.m. Eastern time.
Eastern time. Thanks, Bette. All right. I owe Bette coffee for the rest of the week because it's going to be long for her to produce this, so I will be hooking her up with Starbucks Bette or Dunkin' Donuts? What is your
–
Are you from Boston or something?
No,
you're from Tampa. I know.
I am. I love my Dunkin' Donuts.
All right, it's cheaper than Starbucks, so I appreciate.
Yeah, exactly.
You're hooking me up. Coffee's on me for the rest of the week.
Yes,
starting tomorrow. All right. So for Bette Marston, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you, and thank you to Krista Thompson. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.